afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing? It is doch a wonderful Saturday, and we are what? We are blessed. We are what? We are blessed. Whoa. In my shadows, and I look at what you've given me. I feel like dancing on my tiptoes. I must say, every day I wake and realize you by my side. I know I'm truly blessed for everything you've given me. For all the tenderness you show, do my best with every breath that's in me. Blessed to make sure you never go. There are times that test your faith till you think you might surrender. Baby, looking like an answered prayer. You know I'm truly blessed for everything you've given me. Blessed for all the tenderness you show. Do my best with every breath that's in me. Blessed to make sure you never go. Man, Christina, Christina, man. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This song name, this song is doing things. It's doing things. It's doing things. It's doing wonderful things. You know what it's doing? It's definitely lifting my spirit. Cause when I came to work, I was angry. I was livid. I was angry. I was so angry today. Today, I will tell you all about it, but I was so angry. I was so angry. I was very angry. Mara, this song is most now motivation. I think Tete Mike also just jump started the mood and jump started everything, which are like, oh, brr, 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 brr. You know, like brr, 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 brr. Do you have jumping cables? Yes, we do. It's called Eagle FM.
Always walking in the shadows.
looking like an entrepreneur. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, my dear. How are you?
I'm fine, and how are you?
I'm fantastic. Are you enjoying Christina?
Why are you angry?
You know, somebody was angry when they laugh about it. Ha. Mm. So what had happened was,
Yeah.
So, my personal business was now having...
Because this is Elizabeth Walls. We want to know why were you angry?
My dear. I that is exactly what we were getting to, Tate Mike. So, my personal person, Andishim, he's having was now his friends that moved all the way from the north to Windhoek. Now, these friends of his, they are a party people. Now, I mean, I have never known my person to be a party person, but all of a sudden, Friday is Mamwala. All these many years, no mamwalaing. All of a sudden, Friday is mamwala until 3 a.m. Saturday is mamwala until 4 a.m. Next weekend, mamwala. Monday, mamwala. There's just so much mamwalaing.
That means you were not able to bring out that part of him.
Because I don't drink. Where will we go in mamwala? Me, my idea of mamwala is let's go and eat until we pass out. My dear, so now when the mamwalaing is happening, there's most now no petrol that is being put in. We are just mamwalaing on the petrol that is already in the mamwala car. So now all of a sudden today, on my way to work, because I decided I'm going to go to work early, so I can listen to at least the last hour of your show. My dear. It's for brother men to say, which are, Maragam Nashan Yoma Hori. Ha! I said, my dear, drop me here at the robots, I'll catch a taxi. Drop me here at the robots. I'm not going to put my petrol into a car that is going to Mamara until 4 a.m. Put in your own petrol, put in your own petrol. Me, you can drop me here and I'll get my taxi for $26. How?
No, but help the guy out, man.
No! No, everybody must pay for their own habits. Me, I like cool drink. I make sure that I always have cool drink. If you like mamwalaing, you make sure that you have your petrol for mamwalaing. No, I said no, sir. And him, he's even better luck because he doesn't get paid monthly and he gets paid five on the fifth or something like that.
Yeah.
So now he's like, come on, I show petrol. I'm like, my dear, before the car stacks here, eshete ne rastaka in the middle of the road because of petrol. It's a very difficult thing. So that he, mangare eshete ndinu na ristake ramopate, rihingara tarike gumbo, ngaya dropanjara mpanopo ma robot and ikwato taxi. Yeah, but that money that you're giving the taxi driver, because I'm was very generous with people that drive me around. You know? So if I'm supposed to pay 26, I can give the person like a $50. You understand? So, yeah, that money that you're going to put in the cab, you can also just put in petrol. I said, my dear. And then there will be leftover petrol for mamwalaing. Never. Never. Napukali napuliwa.
So then what happened? When you come in the studio, all that disappeared, you know?
Yes. But then also you were the jump starter. Yeah, you were hyping me up there. You were even singing in the background. I was like, this man. And I heard you say, "Kucha, am I still alive?" I know in my private time, I'm a singer. I know. You know how radio is censored and we don't swear? Like, imagine if you had switched off and then you started swearing your things. So I was like, no. Give me zero. Because, you know, there are many cars that can stuck in the road. There's just something. Exactly. It is not, and it's not something that we can put in $26. So I said, kucha my dear. Say, yeah. Ngeri toka parking go hauto yo e itegerere upe uture mo baholi. It can't. You cannot. Even MNZ will call you, kucha. Is everything okay at home?
Okay, so what are you talking about today?
I have no idea.
Maybe.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's the topic. I have no idea.
I have no idea. So what are you guys into lately? I have no idea. But usually, when we go through our music, our first hour on Elizabeth's World is literally just us unwinding and us just coming down. Because you give us very heavy topics, ne? Then every time I come here, even if I have a topic and I listen to you a little bit, then I start thinking, Kucha, yeah, but my personality, is this really what I want for myself? I start questioning my life choices.
I think that's a good thing, because we don't just want to come in from a heavy something to another heavy.
Exactly. So I just give them a breather for 1 hour and then we can start. But generally, I was also going to play them a little something about a person that that recovered from something that was so bad. This guy, yesterday we were talking about people's life experiences, and we were talking about this guy that was being financially, sexually, emotionally, physically abused by his girlfriend. And my argument was that they used to have sex 3 times a week, and then it happened to 8 times a day, and if he couldn't perform, he would be belittled.
Ooh.
You know, when you're tired and you're like, oh, but it's enough now. It's like, ah, yeah, then. There's Jimmy down the street that also wants me. I'm telling you. So he was having a tough time. So my argument is noticing red flags within a situation before you get into it. So their relationship started off very fast. Yeah. And within a matter of 2 months or so, they were already moving in together. Now, moving in together is not a problem if you guys are moving in together in a sense of finding a place that is neutral to both of you, where it's not somebody else's place or the other one's space, but it's neutral. You guys are all new in that place and the place is for both of you. Then that one is fine. But when it is, no, since you are always at my house, just move in into my house. They get on Sanaka Denge. In my house, yeah. So all these other months that you are here, I need you to pay back pay for the rent. Yeah. All of a sudden, he became a tenant.
That's a mistake a man should never make.
Exactly. That one, I know.
Never ever moved in a woman's house. Never ever moved in a woman's flat.
Yes, you know? It's better that you guys look for a space that is completely new to both of you, where it's not, because when you move into my space, right, I've already decorated my house. I've already figured out the color schemes and everything. Then you are going to come with your yellow curtains. Where are we going to put your yellow curtains in our gray setting? No way. But if we are going to a new space...
As for you and men to have some sort of a control as well.
Which
is actually within our nature as
men.
So at least if you may not actually have another place, you cannot afford another place, at least move to the men's place, you know?
Yeah.
Because we don't pay attention too much, you know, we don't pay much attention to things in terms of this is mine, don't touch that, you know. This should be the way you find it. No, we don't. Yeah. So at least if you go to a men's place, that won't be the issue much. Mm. Yeah.
Marangan, numbe ane shanda yandi tutu tandi kemp. I'm a very dramatic lover.
And then when you wake up, you come back.
No, you must come get me. but I was also saying that throughout because our theme for this year, for 2025, my audience and I, our theme is trusting the process and evaluating everything, including ourselves. Now, throughout this year, we have also learned that maybe we are a kind of a little abusive. Because those are bad manners.
Yeah, no, in a way, we all little devils.
So now that little devil, is the one that sometimes we need to address, and also we need to see it. And also yesterday, one of the conversations, apart from the guy that was being abused, one of the conversations was this guy that grew up with his mother that was Jehovah's Witness, right? And yeah. She was those prayer warrior type of women and what. Eh? And I was telling them, Kucha, guys, if your mother is giving the car to the church, there is something wrong. If your mother all of a sudden, every single time that you guys are coming in, going out, all of a sudden you guys are demons, you guys are being verbally abused. We need to recognize when parents are abusive in ways that are real, but we don't want to accept it because they are our parents. So now you think that your mother is just like that because she goes to church, she's a church lady. But the truth is, sometimes they go to church to go and hide their demons, to go and hide disorders, to go and hide real mental conditions, right? And we overlook it because one, she's mother, and two, she's a church lady. Mara, if your mother is trying to drown you, apparent under the notion of she's baptizing you because the demons are bad and you are bad. I'm like, guys, you guys are just being abused. There's nothing there. Kuchanua, aye, ungere kosho iri shashino, andono kongere kosho amuni nguamos.
Yeah.
Umawashiki aningirwanga membo mara shitamu iko ngere kane na meme weni yang dipping kwa pastor in the tan drowning amanga mome akashona. When you come out they have to CPR you or CP whatever you how. It's because your mom is abusing you under the notion of church.
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes the person doesn't realize that that's what they are doing.
Yeah.
In most cases the things that we don't really things that we are abusing other people, or we
when we do abuse, one
yeah,
hey, oh, okay, he's still drowning, and you think it's absolutely normal because if it was a guy from the streets that's coming to drown you, and the time we can, you know,
exactly,
because it's your mother, apparently it's absolutely normal. I feel like we encourage bad things because out of fear of our parents, but when our parents are wrong, they're just wrong.
Yeah, no, definitely. There comes a time when you really think that's wrong, it's wrong.
Mm.
No matter who you are, whether you are the president, mm-hmm. or you are a security guard.
Yeah, exactly. Wrong is wrong. So this one was how they were being mistreated, how they were being beaten, how they were being starved, and it was just crosses everywhere in the house. When a woman becomes obsessed with the church, we can't say with God, but with the church, right?
Yeah.
It is evident that it's an obsession because it is it's overkill.
Yeah,
it's extra killing on top of killing already. Because you go into a very deeply religious somebody's house, right? And you can see that, okay, this person is religious, you know, because here you see a cross, here you see a Bible, here you see a candle, you see normal things of indicating that this person is deeply religious. But when you get into somebody's sitting room and there are 10 crosses on one wall, you're like, wait a minute. What kind of demons are you facing, sister, that you need 10 crosses? Eh? What kind of, I'm asking questions like, is this not a mental disorder for you to give your whole, you, for, first of all, the church advises you to resign. Eh? You are a whole sister near somebody.
Do you know how people get to that level?
How?
You
know? Desperation.
No, sometimes the pastors are very clever.
Persuasive.
I'm not putting the church into a bad perspective, but,
yeah.
You know, some of this, say, you see when you go to church and they will tell you, let's say, you must have faith, you understand? You must have faith for this to manifest in your life. Now, definitely, that's something to manifest. It doesn't just come out of the blue.
Yes.
You have to do it. Now, when that doesn't manifest, you don't think that it's because of you. you are not doing enough. You are not doing enough. And therefore, one crosses that you have, you think it's not
enough. Yeah, or you think it's not enough because the things are not working. When last did you fast at the mic?
And you know, fasting once is not enough.
Me, I don't think I know how to fast, aka. Me, I always forget, man. Kucha ni nandi fasting ane ngaye mitri akagoko igele fe mandi fasting ashilishin. I'm telling you, 10 o'clock. Kwa le anjoka brechen. But yeah, like, we're talking, so basically, I think we're just gonna have a continuation of, deeply rooted stories that have so many red flags that we don't identify. Mainly sometimes we don't identify with them because we are inside. So when you are inside something, it's very difficult to see what it actually looks like. And up until you come out of it, then you notice that, man, oshima shino, oshiri wrong. You understand?
That's what the right thing, what you said.
Yeah.
You only it's only being recognized by someone else.
That's, yes. And that's only if you are talking about it. Like with one of the stories that we also heard yesterday was this particular young man, because the question was, what do we think happens to the children that are left behind after, the mother and father have an argument and one parent kills the other? And his dad killed his mom. And he was telling us about the experience. He was telling us from the beginning, you know, and I keep saying that if we are going to tell stories in order for us to be understood, we have to tell the whole entire story from the beginning so that those that understand can pick up exactly where things went wrong. Most of us start talking about, yeah, my mother is just crazy with the church and she's what, but you're not talking about the abusive relationship with your father where she was being beaten and she was being what, and then where she comes from, where she was also treated badly, and then her lack of self-esteem. You're not talking about her whole entire story. So he was telling us about his story, and his father was a medical doctor. Yeah. And his mom was just a stay-at-home mom, basically. And he's never seen his parents sleep in one room. So his dad always used to sleep on the couch. Marakanti, he would sleep on the couch, wait for everybody to go and sleep so that he can go and fraternize with other women. So he was like a serial cheater. So the mother came to a point where she's like, you know what? I'm not going to divorce. I'm not going to leave. Mara, you can do whatever you want, just don't involve the child in whatever you are doing. And it was working out. The arrangement was working out up until the man breached this arrangement by introducing his son to his mistress and telling the child to lie about it. Now, my question was, you men and women out there that are exposing your children to your mistresses and your side dudes and all of that, do you guys hear how it affected him as a child? Because he was riddled with guilt and he has never lied to his mother in his life, you know? And now he was being asked by his father to lie to his mother about Auntie Stacy that they were with and where he got the toy, because he got a Christmas toy from Auntie Stacy. An expensive one. And then also Auntie Stacy had the same kind of ring like his mother has that his mother doesn't wear anymore. Because now the man is stealing jewelry.
Elizabeth, are you okay? You are listening to all this.
I am. No. I am. Because the thing is that we need to understand that there's nothing new under the sun. There's absolutely nothing new under the sun. And many people drown in their problems because they think it's only them.
You know what? Mm-hmm. I think the point is this, that, you know why life is so good?
Why?
Like, go because you can feel pain.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so that, so you appreciate the times where you are not completely in pain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, It's by design, that's how it is.
Yeah.
And when we go through all these, It's pain. That's what life is.
Exactly.
And that's what makes it so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
If we were living in life that I know how you think, what are you thinking, and you know what I would do next, and all those
predictability.
What would be the mystery of life? How would we enjoy that? You know.
Mm.
So even the pain, the suffering that you are going through are part of a complete of your life.
Yes. It's part of the process.
Part of the process that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and unless you have that kind of outlook, looking at that way, and if you say that, well, why am I, I'm a victim of this, there's nothing I can do, that bring the misery in your life.
Exactly. And sometimes we are inviting misery, my dear.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it likes company. But the thing that I'm struggling with is letting things be. Like, Gandhi, no problem, guys. Control! Yeah, just letting things be.
Why? Do you know why you have a problem of letting things be?
No, tell me, psych.
It's because you love to be in control.
Yes.
You love to be in control, and you cannot let things be when you are not in control.
Yes, you're correct.
And unless you learn to understand that there are certain things, no matter how much I want to be in control with, I will not be in control. Those are the things you can let, because because you want to be in control, and sometimes you pretend to be, not pretend, you think that by asking and trying to be in control, you are. You are not. It's the weather is hot outside, and you kind of like, this is too hot, and you know, and there's nothing you can do about the weather. You can do something about yourself.
Yourself.
You're in control with. Yeah.
But you can only control yourself. You can't control other people, situations, things.
Exactly. So think about that. Sometimes you are not.
It's very smart to say. It's very difficult to do.
Exactly.
Do you know that even with the exercise that you gave me, I failed tremendously. I was on day one forever. Day one forever. I never passed that threshold. Shashino, woo!
And once you pass that, you will. The practice, it's the whole practice, right? Mm-hmm. You know, much of the bad things that we do are part of our practice. Sometimes we don't realize that we are doing that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, but they become who we are now without even realizing.
Mm.
And once those little small habits that are good, they become you.
Mm.
Yeah? Yeah.
So now you're just always an angry auntie.
Yeah, now you're always an angry auntie. When you go to that auntie, she's always complaining.
I'm telling you, high blood pressure and everything. You're like, how, ma'am? No, nene, she. Oga koshwa marina gakangura. Ohel oga kaka. Ne? Gakoshwa ina gakangura. Oga kangura nai. Like, who? Aye, auntie.
Your eyes are just focused on that. Because it's the programming now.
It is. Ah, no, but at least, I always say that the one thing that we can do is at least know our problems, so that when we know our problems, we can say things like, but I'm overreacting because I like control.
Exactly, you know.
Mm. And then you drink a cool drink and you let it slide.
Mm. So slowly, when you know it, it's only when you can do something about it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but when you don't know, you just go in thinking things are normal.
Exactly. Tate Mike, quickly hold the line for me.
Onda kalahandu yako parateza moro e data. Paife, ohandimo kuyadi. Nondaka, ne data, no shoyo o utungaraka vahupi. O netweka imwe, o kufutarumwe, o kuinyengarumwe, o kujapandali. Fio papa ndauka. Onda pumga o netweka oyo, hai dira ya fange. O mafiku amwe, o handi streaming. O mafiku amwe, o handi popi. O mafiku amwe, o handi nigaishe, po shikanto shimwe. Pamwina parateza, o inda horora, ameha ishipangere, osho pa umwene. Dira, o makota fanoni data, mom karo wili, mwana parika o kutuma ko tumaraka, o ku streaminga, no ku denga pamwina parates. Konga, parates, Namibia.
Always, always with him, parates.
Lipura.
O
Alrighty, good afternoon to you. Yes, Tate Mike, we were talking and we were preaching. Hey, words of kindness.
Sometimes you need to preach.
My dear, sometimes we need to preach, especially towards end of the year when everybody is so fatigued and everybody is so over it. I think that it's important for us to keep preaching just because we can.
Yeah, no, so, and, yeah, no, you know, the thing is this, people have a short span of concentration, you know.
Yes.
So, and,
but that's influenced by all this social media that we keep looking at. Everything is so short, and it's training our minds to concentrate for shorter amounts of time, and we don't realize it. That's why I keep telling people, listen to long things, watch long things. It will also train your mind to concentrate longer. Now everybody's just watching something for 30 seconds.
And I'm becoming stupid and stupider because everything is available.
Yeah.
I don't find hard. I don't find time now to kind of like, let me learn this, you know?
Because
any solution you can just, okay, how do you do it? What? You know?
And then they give you the shortest way to do it quickly.
I can even think of unpacking the day. When I came in unpacking the day, I really didn't know much about economy. You know much about economy. Mm-hmm. But no, many things are available. When you learn, okay, what is this? Yeah, immediately.
Now you learn. Now you're a whole qualified economist with 2 years work experience.
But you think now, hey, this guy is an economist. Mm-hmm. You know?
Could you know me? I can speak economy in my sleep. But all in all, you're fine.
I'm okay. I haven't spoken to you for a while. So
and then you thought of me today, ne?
Let me give this lady a ring and just a quick chat. I hope her listeners won't. I'm also your listeners anyway.
So you're also a fan, my dear. There's no discrimination against fans here. If they wanted to be the one to call, why didn't they call before you? How?
Exactly. And I don't call often. I'm given a right to speak a little bit longer. So.
Exact. Preach. Preach! Go with the Congo, man.
You're doing a great job.
Okay, but I also wanted to ask, before you leave, right? Why do you think, people abuse children?
Oh, that's a
heavy one.
A heavy one. And you know, this is one thing in when I talk to people, when I in a counseling session or something like that, I would say there is no a particular way you saying this is what it is and it's all what it is. You understand? Yeah, you look at the patterns, you know, that maybe individual is involved. You look at individual history, then you can point to that this individual have gone through this in life that would have affect them to behave this way and that way.
Has some form of influence.
Yeah, it has some form of influence. Mm-hmm. And not the same, you can't say, everyone who abuse children is like this. But the sometimes you know, you get to believe that
it's the correct way.
Yeah, it's the correct
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even if it's a good, it's not a good thing, it becomes value.
Yeah.
Then for a child to behave must be taken. That has now a value and a conviction of your way of life. So as you grow, that's the principle you hold on. That's the value you hold on.
Yeah.
So, and then you apply that because that's the only thing you know. Yeah, na ningerone kurongore kucha wanga nuta rongoro kana kaite kapura kucha shoot take a discipline kucha go and sleep.
You are grounded.
Yeah, then I can nakarundukiswa ne.
You are grounded.
Yeah, you are grounded. Go and what you are not going to do. So you what the kucha oka nakarundukiswa. Yeah. So because that's all what they know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shimwene is a really. It could be a psychological condition, you know, within the person based on a mental, how would I go? I'm looking for
condition.
Yeah, mental conditioning.
Mm.
And in this way, this person is sick.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me give you an example.
Yeah.
You as a normal person, in a normal way, you are a very normal person in the way you are. But
yeah.
If you said today that you are going to kill yourself, okay, you're going to end your life. No, you are sick. Understand?
Yeah.
You're not thinking in the normal way you normally think. Things have actually disturbed your mental way of thinking, your normal way of thinking. And because of that, you actually decide that this is what you're going to do. You understand?
Yes.
So whatever the case may be, you know? So that means someone, something might have actually, you know, let's say for example, someone who adipago kana no kashonego kuzako pokare ipayo, wekadipaga kashonego kana kashon, you know?
Yeah.
You can't. Hey, that person is in the right mind of a way of normal pay of a normal how a person thinks. No, you can't. Something happened. Something happened. Whatever that we can't just we can't say what it is, you know, because we don't know the person.
Yes.
If we follow their background a little bit, we may find something that we can link it to say, yeah, that may have actually contributed to the way he behaves.
Okay, yeah. I hear you on that one. So, and also another question, ne? So this is a battle that a lot of people are facing, but it's not really a conversation that comes up because we initially get what we wanted. So sometimes we have partners that are addicted to substance, addicted to narcotics, addicted to gambling, addicted to all of these other external factors or external things, right? And then they finally go cold turkey on it. They leave it. This addiction that we were complaining about as spouses. That, oh, that ya no marov. Ne? Nenge tati ya ningyo drugs. Nenge tati ya gambling. Nenge tati ya ningyo kabetinga. Nenge tati ya ningyo shike. You understand? Right? Or even the wife. Now, the question that I have is, what happens now when their personality also changes with the sobriety,
With the behavior that they change?
So they change now, they are now in recovery as addicts, right? They are now recovering, and they used to be alcoholics, for example. Kuchata furunga nyara, he can't go a day without beer or alcohol, and it was him for a while, and then all of a sudden he decides that no, he's not going to drink anymore, and then he stays on the sober path, but then he just becomes something else. What do you call that? That personality that he becomes. Like, is that who the person truly was prior to the alcohol? And you fell in love with the alcoholic version of them? Or because we were talking about people change, but the conversation around people changing in a way that hurts you as the person that is their support system. Because we say that, oh, we don't want Tate to be gambling anymore. But Tate used to find a sense of joy in this gambling. And now Tate comes back and Tate is always irritable. Tate is always shouting. Tate is always angry. Tate is always what? Tate is always what? So what's that?
Yeah, you see, when you become addicted, addicted to, let's say, alcohol, you know?
Yeah.
It's a replacement of, first of all, people don't just get addicted, you know, first of all. It starts small, okay? Small in the way where, sometimes it becomes progressive for some people, So you just were trying. Some boy, you started, we all smoked at one point.
Yeah.
And at one point, if we don't stop, we become smokers.
Mm.
Then now, it would be difficult for us now to get out of that. It's not because we were smoking, because we were stressed, or because, I mean, just because the habit that we started, that we didn't stop.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
It's something that seemed to be cool.
Mm.
There are certain things that we're doing because in the company of our peers, that is what's accepted, and want to be cool like them.
Mm.
And over time, because I have been living with these people, have to abide to the rules of the company, you know, of the people around me.
Yes.
So in a way, it became a pressure for me, I call it a peer pressure, a pressure for me to be accepted in that group. Okay? Then it became a condition that I cannot control anymore.
Mm.
So now, if I have to change that, that means I actually to get out of that group. I'm no longer accepted by that group.
Yes.
You understand? Now I'm stuck with my wife at home.
Mm. Even the way you are saying stuck, like stuck, like oh my God.
It benefits me in health wise. In a health wise, it benefited me that I'm not an alcoholic or something. I'm on my recovery way. I'm on my way of my recovery.
Mm.
But I need to compensate that with something else.
Mm.
The way I used now to hang out with others and. How do I compensate that? You have to compensate with something else.
Mm.
Sometimes it becomes now irritating because of the limitation you are in. You are not used to be at home.
Mm.
You only used to come at home for a few hours and you go and sleep.
Yes.
You don't even have much time to talk to people or whatever or something like that. Now you have a whole day surrounded by
these people.
The children and the wife.
Hey, your relatives.
Maybe you have nothing to do, and you know, the more your mind is, you have so much time to think of certain things, the more you become, you know, you more concentrate on yourself. You understand?
Mm.
You might who just sitting at home and doing nothing, or a man, not just a woman. Who's sitting at home doing nothing?
Mm.
So when you come back, they always have something to pick, you know?
Yeah.
Because they have so much time to think so many things, you know?
Mm.
If both of us work, when you come home, you are tired, you want to sleep, you want to rest, you don't have time to focus on other things.
Yeah.
You understand? So the environment now dictates what you turn into.
Mm.
You know, so because if you are now in an environment where now whatever people do or whatever, it turns you into a very aggressive person because you feel irritated, you know, and now you don't know how to, you know, how to act in a new environment because it's a new environment for you.
Yeah.
You understand? So, and that will turn you in what it will turn you out of, in different houses that could be different.
Yeah.
So it just understand that process that, you know, now you are in a new environment. You are used to be in something that you have now stopped. Now in this new environment, it would create a new behavior, you know, and sometimes those behavior may not even be good.
Yeah. They may not be nice.
Yeah. They may not be nice. They even started to think it was good that you go and get drunk.
Now. Now you're just a man that is always complaining every day. You find something new to complain about.
You used to be around in the sitting room. Now he's around. You are stuck in your room because you don't want to
catch. Hold the line, please.
Goeie nuus, Kimberg nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinter nuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Kimberg te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Alrighty. So he becomes, so now you just even start avoiding the person because the person is just not nice.
Yeah, no, but you also, the people at home, they are not used to you.
Yeah.
Being in that environment. So they have to adapt to you, to the new you.
Mm.
And sometimes if you have.
Now, was this always you? Was this always you? This new you? Was this always you? Or was this new you created because the old you had to die?
No, the old you have to die. There is no, you can't be, there's no a permanent you.
Yeah, okay.
Your environment will always determine the kind of person you become.
Aha.
Yeah, there's no permanent you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you may be now, like here, you might say, no, I have nothing to do with homosexual. You get in jail, end up looking at other men.
Apparently it's called jail gay. Gay in jail.
You have jail, you get in jail and you kind of like, this one.
He's kind of looking feminine.
You understand?
Yeah.
There's no permanent you. Your environment will determine what you become. You know? That's how life is.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's not always that you are at the mercy of the environment.
Yeah.
As I said, you go in a war environment, you know, and where people actually have no water, no food, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The moment if you drink your urine, you won't drink it,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you find yourself in that environment, you may drink your own urine.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah. You might even eat your friends.
You may even eat your friends, you know. You or certain things that you never think of eating, you may end up eating.
Yes.
You know. So now you're thinking, am I not the person I used to be anymore? No. You know, you don't have the permanent you.
Mm.
You know.
There's no such thing as a permanent you.
No, there's no such a thing. Mm. You know. Even in terms of what you were yesterday, you are not what you are today.
Yeah. Because we are ever evolving.
We're ever evolving. Mm. You know. So if I say something to you today, you know, yeah, I used to tell you, I love you. And then, you know, all of a sudden I don't love you anymore. You know, that changes you.
Mm-hmm.
You relate to me has changed. The way you relate to life, the way you see life now have changed. Someone dumped you or, you know, cheated on you. Your world have changed.
Yeah.
You?
Yes.
Yeah. You're no longer the same anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have changed.
You have changed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's no permanent you. You can change anybody. You can kill everybody's a potential.
Yes, I keep telling, and this is what I keep telling people that, guys, you guys must stop answering this question of who are you. Well, I'm a very honest person. I'm what. You must, at the end of your statement, you must say, right now.
Yeah.
Not forever. This is not who you are forever, because you only truly know who you have been at the end of your life, where you can summarize, this is what I've been, this is what I've gone through, this is what I've done, this is what I haven't done, and therefore I think and believe that I am like this. And because it's the end of the chapter. But as long as we are still going, you can be a whole church lady today, and then tomorrow you are a murderer.
No, that's why I tell people is that you don't have a permanent identity.
Yes.
It's always depending on the circumstances.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So you can't act the same, always the same. Then you can say that's who you are. But, you know, definitely, even with a person like now, let's say, for example, I approach you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I'm not the kind of person that you like. That's not the type of person I would actually respond to. What do you do? You kind of tell me, no, go to hell or whatever. But
no, we usually just say, so we don't turn them down like that. We just say, no, I'm married, or I have a boyfriend, or I'm lesbian. You just say such things. You don't say, I don't want.
The two guys would approach, definitely you would definitely react differently.
Yeah. To the cute one. You know, when I was younger, Yeah. When I was younger, there's this story that my mother tells, right? I think I was like, 13 or something. And my mom has, brothers, right? So one of my uncles, Kukulevi. So we went and went to hang out my mom went to visit her brothers and they were having a braai. And now at some point there were neighbor kids and all of that. And it was most the time where everything is coming in, you know, puberty, what. So there's this boy that decided that no, he wants to talk to me, I like you. Now me, very angry, eh? Very angry, I go to my uncle. Now, Kukulevi is those dudes, ne? That's like 3 meters long, 3 meters tall, eh? 3 meters tall, and he is big, and he is strong, yeah, jomanyamino, eh? Yeah. So I went to report to Kukulevi, kucha, hi, unoka mateke ponche, kahara nua tuka popireki kororo, kokahara nja nua, ngayne kaini machangaka, and hakumano squara, and what, you know? Now my uncle was livid. Yeah, my uncle is my ultimate standby. He just wants, if I say somebody's doing what, yeah, him, he's standing up now. So yeah. Now, when he was about to go and address this boy and go and beat this boy now, like, because he was angry, yeah? My other uncle asked him, which I leave him, but, Okana hono, ngeroka mati hono, okwari eka hala, ando, ehokoro rondo no eluva. Ndisho tapo pinga wa shashoka mati neka hala. Ngu ahala, o hafiki thanga natangu etumwara kandia kuchanda mono kamati. Nengo hamwe nara. I saw my uncle sit down and I was like, okay. That's when, okay, bye.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't have a permanent face. Otherwise you become a robot.
Yeah.
We as human beings, you can't say, I am this.
Yes.
I'm kind. I'm loving.
Yes.
There are moments when you are hateful.
Yes. And vengeful.
You are inconsiderate.
And arrogant.
Yeah. So you really can't say, yeah, there is something that is dominant in you. You're more likely to act in this way in this situation, you know. But it doesn't make necessary that you, what you are. You understand?
Mm.
Yeah? So we, on a constant basis, we define ourselves as we move.
Yes.
You know, today I could be, you know, you find me in a situation and you can't think, is this the mic I know? You
know? Especially on the road. I think on the road, we see our true colors when it comes to who we are, Shash, you know? The way we are throwing hands and insults there to other drivers. Hey, Oka, sweet lady. Have you ever seen a woman that doesn't look like she can ever swear and then she starts swearing on the road? You're like, my goodness.
It just reminded me something recently, you know, with my daughter. My daughter is about, 15, I think 14 now. Or 15 actually. You know,
we don't know.
And, you know, I never felt, I realized something. Okay, now my daughter went to, we were in the shop and asked her, go and get a cool drink. Okay. In her going to fetch a cool drink, an old man of my age.
Yeah.
Cold hair. It's kind of like, okay, what's your name? Asking, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh, God.
And I see from a distance.
And you went and to protect your child from a predator.
And from a distance, when she came back and I said, did that man talk to you? Yeah, no, he stopped me asking, what is my name? And you know how I felt inside. I even become. I didn't say anything. And then I went out. So we went outside. And I kind of like, I'm asking myself. Now I'm asking my daughter, why am I feeling this way? I'm feeling this anger in myself. And then I realized, you know, I'm still actually thinking about that man who asked you.
I don't do, like, why?
Your name, you know, and all that. I said, well, how that old man asking is such a young, you know.
Yeah, you know, like sugar daddy things. No, she's a baby.
And then on top of that is your baby now. You're kind
exactly.
Of like, oh,
like, oh no. I know we post stage as you know. Oshi mashono ne, osho ne hashi kozinga asa ne, to become so overprotective over their daughters because it just comes from that kind of trauma of that thing that happened to you at the shop that day. All of a sudden you're like, oh my God, every time she goes out, this is probably what she's facing.
No, that's what you're thinking now. You know, every time now she goes out, you know, there are these creepy men of my age actually looking at 13 or 14 years old.
Yeah. You know? Hey, my dude had a nigger moment the other day, last Sunday. We were dropping off the Ombushanje at back at home, but now where they stay, Kokahanja Paka, there is no tarred road, so we had to go off road. Now we all know that, guys. Eshete, I will not, guys. So pefe munjira nembuno, okwaza academy okamwe keriko keserembera tahingara sharongo ngambera ombirigide adirongo ne. He basically just kissed us like. on the car to car now. And now the man is very angry and oshima tashiuka. Onza no kwanjo mbiri mana, I think it wasn't enough for nguno wae tune. It wasn't enough. Eh? Kucha, how, one, you are drinking with a whole, you are driving with a whole beer in your hand. And you're also driving very fast in a place like this. And you almost bumped and you are arrogant. Now, the man in his car, right? He is in with his children.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then here in this car, we are in with our children.
Mm.
And then it's two dudes having a nigger moment where none of them can show their children that they are weak.
Yeah.
So now both of them are just going at each other. Eh? Now this one starts kucha, oh, andora kucha, nandimbirike, shashinongo uneshete. Like, oh, shima shaimo. This one is like, yeah, I'm going to, oh. Exactly. Because it's basically just driving recklessly in a residential area.
Yeah.
Oh, shima shaimo. Tukamonenge hi, hae nguno kwa dengera nana, oferende dea dihedo porisinde, nkwaita oka hautota mangwa ponono kurin yetarundirwa no. Ucho kwa pumanje no, and that you, whoa, guys. And I know, ne, it was just that thing of, they don't want to look a specific way in front of their children, because if it was just the two of them, ando ipa arombiri ndetashi kanapo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
now you don't want to be the weaker father.
By our nature, everything that we do is competition.
Exactly. I even told them, Kucha, there that what happened there was just a nigger moment.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with what was actually happening. Shashino, osheki yulano no kuri, mara nyotamwi yulala beyond what is happening here, so. But thank you so much, Tate Mike.
I really hang out with you today. You know?
Eh? Thank you so much for being my visitor.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. I always enjoy your show and I love being part of it. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Tate Mike. And now I'm going to, do you want a song to play? You know what? Listen to the next song.
Yeah.
Yeah, and see if you like it.
Okay, definitely.
All right, thank you so much.
Great, thank you.
Ciao, ciao. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing? Ladies and gentlemen, we are going into the vibe, into the vibe, into the vibe. Now, we are going to go to a specific borane and tell me what you think. But you guys know this one already.
I need you to take your time. Masinacha.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wajali wa mimi na ngine mbuze
nyapeli Lota ndoretu Usamtanda na noma gupeli
Wajali mina ngine mbuze
Mbuze nyapeli Lothando lwethu
Usangithandana Noma kuphelile Oh yeah yeah yeah
Oh yeah Yabona uthando Alofuna ube mawa Lelo thathe isikhathi sakho You don't have to rush it, babe Sangithandana noma kuphelile Odali mina nginembuze ngapheli Phathelene nothando lwethu Usangithandana noma kuphelile
Darling,
I know you got
21 questions.
Unga basu tando rami. Whoa, am I alive? I want to yazu go to me and now was there
chemistry.
Ukaste na ma peche si.
Whoa, leave me now, Natwe.
Baby, I need you to go
down low.
I'm standing in
no under.
Baby, I need you to
go down low.
I'm standing in
no under.
Down in the
CEO.
Shall you go to the mama?
Ta da da ta ta ta. Ta da da ta ta ta.
I need you to
take your time.
I'll see your job.
All righty. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I hope you guys are enjoying the music. But before that, residuals, okay?
Everything is faded. Maybe this is karma, definition of JD. This stays on my mind. This stays on my mind. Try to put a muzzle on my crazy feelings. 1 minute I'm cold, and then the next I'm tripping. Oh, with somebody new, I swear she don't deserve it. Oh, it's still on my mind. She's still on my mind. And we build it up. Build it up just to let it wash away. Tell me, did I lace you up? Lace you up just to watch you run away. Tell me who, who's getting on my love? Who's getting on my love?
ashamed. I don't like thinking about it. I swear that it's wearing me down. No. But tell me, ooh, who's getting all of my? Who's getting all of my residuals? Said his feelings mutual. It took some time to realize I'm a different people. And love is blind. I see love is blind. Can we build it up? Build it up. Just to let it wash away. And tell me that I lace you up. Lace you up. Just to watch you run. Nickname. I don't like thinking about it. I swear that it's wearing me down. No. But tell me, ooh, who's getting all of my? Who's getting all of my residual?
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. It's an honor to be here. It is with my pleasure that I present to you tonight, Below Zero by Friday!
Summer's over, and you're still not sober. You've been moving too fast, now the time moving slower. I'm still on the line. When they turn on the lights, it's time to call it in. Hope I'm still on your mind. Don Julio, tastes like water on your lips. You had one too many trips. Tryna run away from home, they like Miami where she live. On a Sunday, get lit. I pray you make it back. Cause when September comes around, system. All that partying deep in clubs, but you losing your rhythm. Too much late nights, you don't know what a morning is. Better wake up before you lose out on this. And I ain't got no pride to save you, oh my woman. I just want you inside to give you all my loving. You're losing your soul, but you call it soul searching. Oh, I'm losing hope, cause all I have is only you. Tastes like water on your lips. You had one too many trips. Tryna run away from home. They like Miami where she live. On a Sunday, get lit. I pray you make it up. Cause when September comes around,
it's getting scary. chance, oh. Standing at the dark, wanna love you before you get below zero.
I know what he's done for me. Too many are dead and gone, but you're still sparing me. Tell me why they envy me. Lord, I pray you defend me from my enemy. Hope I see it through before I go. Not in our hands, it's in God's plan. Don't know where we're headed on this road. Not in our hands, it's in God's plan. I'm standing strong, they fall under me. Won't let them knock me down off my feet. Too many times I fall on my knees. Tryna take the wheel, almost drove off track. Although take the wheel so I won't look back, oh. See you, I'm like, as I did. God, it cool, tell me, babe. My game, I meditate, yeah. I was down low, but you saved me. I know what he's done for me. Too many are getting gone, but you're still staring at me. Tell me why they leave me. Lord, I pray you defend me from my enemy. Hope I see it through before I go. Not in our hands, it's in God's plan. Don't know where we're headed on this road. Not in our hands, it's in God's plan.
All the evil are lurking, people are searching. Short life, heaven closing the curtain. Man, I could have been dead and gone 6 feet, but you saved my soul.
I saw my conquer, it's permanent. It got to be more than we'll go infinite.
When all of the shoulders cold, you bring me peace like home. I've been through the rain, through fire. Can nobody dim this light when you're on my side. Took an interest in me, now it's double. Come and see inflation. I've been through the rain, through fire. Can nobody dim this light when you're on my side. Bring the UV light for my testimony. I know fit to explain.
I know what he's done for me. Too many are dead and gone, but you're still sparing me.
Tell me why
they envy me. Lord, I pray you defend me from my enemy. Oh, I see it through before I go. Not in our hands, it's in God's way. Don't know where we're headed on this road. Not in our hands, it's in God's way. I know what he's done for me. Too many are dead and gone, but you're still sparing me. Defend me from my enemy.
Yeah. 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 Fire boy, yeah, so. Ooh, yeah. Although you want to you bad. You give me love, I give you back, oh. You give me this, I give you that, oh. One time, oh, yeah. Although you will, you are so wonderful. If I leave you, now you, I go run back to, yeah. I go run back to you. It's wrong for you, baby, I'm going away. Your love is true.
far away. Loving you day by day. If I'm me, you say far away. My tongue, you don't matter. If I don't go, now you are gonna come back to you. Yeah. I go come back to you, you. Cause it's your fire.
To count on me, I'm here for you. Now that the pain just This is it, guess we rose. No wonder now I'm true. All them days felt like wasted time. I need no longer serve me. Cause we both were on different pages. But on both lovers never lost. And now I hold you down. Still lost, still lost. I no longer matters to me who's wrong. Nobody knows what we've been through. So I will hold you down. Still lost, still lost. I no longer matters to me who's wrong. Nobody knows what we've been through. So I will hold you down. Still lost, still lost.
The boys know, makes you feel good, yeah. I know you're out of my league, but that won't scare me away, oh no. You've carried on so long, you couldn't stop if you tried it. Built your wall so high that no one could climb it. But I'm gonna try. Would you let me see beneath your beautiful? Would you let me see beneath your puppet? Take it off now, girl. Take it off now, girl. I wanna see inside. Would you let me see beneath your beautiful tonight?
You let all the girls go. Makes you feel good, don't it?
Oh, good afternoon. Nadia Mane.
In the morning.
Good afternoon, Nene Matria.
Good afternoon, Tete Buena. I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing?
Wonderful.
That's great.
And the very informative conversation that you had with Mike, my mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you very much. It was so insightful and very educative. I don't even know where to start, but when I look at my notes,
yes,
the key points that I jotted down prompted me to just come in.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, your question was, is that always you know, when we change when we put on maybe the true color.
Mm-hmm. Or when we change our personalities or we change the things that we have done.
Yes.
Is that the true us or is it just because of circumstances and situations?
I think it's just, for me, it's just a fake.
Uh-huh. It's a fake.
A fake of us.
Oh-ho. So then who is the real us?
The real us remains who we are. But our identity, our identity there remains, and also our character to a certain extent remains permanent. Of course, our behaviors, our attitudes, yeah, obviously may need to change to fit the prevailing situation. And you might, of course, have to adapt to that situation.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make you or change you the really who you are. So you still maintain your identity, your character, let's say, so to say. And, of course, you might also to try to guide against, you being, you can be influenced.
Yes.
But not to the extent, or the degree of compromising the way you are.
Yeah.
But in that manner, so you have that permanence in you, that will then dictate to you that at this particular situation, so you might need to change some kind of, you know, you adapt some strategy that go along with that. But that's not exactly what you are. That's my take on that. But
Tata Mike was saying that we are forever evolving because we adapt to our environments and we adapt to the situations and circumstances in which we are in. And that makes sense to, you know,
Acknowledge and I agree with that. What I'm saying is that pertaining to your question, that yes, we still remain authentic. To our culture or to whatever you believe in.
Yes.
But of course, you find people in different cultures practicing different issues and eating and whatever. You might not succumb to what they are doing. Of course, you can adapt. You know, the verse in the Bible that states, when you find yourself among the Greeks or Grecians and whoever, so you adapt to that situation. So that is the situation that's prevailing. And it's a kind of a leadership situation, situational leadership.
Yes.
So, but that does not mean your identity, who you are, has to involve in that manner. It's only your attitude, your behavior, you adjust to this situation. That's my, what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I fully agree with you.
So the many, many other things that you said and, you know, and you know, we had a discussion and it was very enticing.
Yeah.
So as of that, it's very, very important that, what did you start with now? I forgot.
We have stuck with many, many things. We have stuck with many, many things. We have had an eventful week this week. We have spoken about a lot of things. But for now, I want us to listen to somebody's life quickly. And then you call back after 18 minutes and we come and dissect, what we identified as something that was vital. So the next guy's name, what is his name? Yeah. Lee Marvin. Right?
Marvin.
Yes. He's going to be talking about his life experiences and the things that he used to do, but he's also going to talk from a grassroots level. So maybe we can dissect that. Maybe we can see elements that are, wild and that are bad, that do have a way of impacting our lives later on. And maybe we can identify why he turned out the way he turned out.
So, oh, yeah, I remember now that when you came in, you were talking about the, our children. Why do you hate our children?
Yeah.
And where to watch and think it.
Yeah.
So just remember. So let's listen to him and then we see how we can come in.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much, Tate Buana.
Welcome, ma'am.
See you after 18 minutes, okay?
Thank you, mommy.
All right.
God bless.
God bless. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to dive into the story of Lee Marvin, and he's going to be telling us about his life and what I want us to do with these exercises that I'm giving, right? What I want us to do is to listen. We listen and we identify things that don't sit well with us. Now, there is no limitation to what time you can call in. You can listen to something or you can hear something that doesn't sit well with you, and then you call me and then we talk about what doesn't sit well with you, and then we can just sum it up and we can identify, because at the end of the day, right, these are people's real life experiences and there is nothing new under the sun. We might think today that, oh my goodness, the story that is being told here that matriarch is making us listen to is something that I would never experience. I live in a bougie place, or I live in the ghetto, or I live in the slums, or I live in the village, I live in where, and then tomorrow your child is doing it, tomorrow your spouse is doing it, tomorrow you are doing it, and it just hits you so hard when it seems like it's something that is so far away from you. Have you ever thought that something is so far away from you up until it gets into your house? Sometimes it gets into your house, it creeps into your house, and you have no idea. So I'm equipping you with knowledge, right? So that one day when you're sitting in a cab and you hear a woman complaining about these very same scenarios, right? You know what to say. You know how to say what you need to say. You know that you treat it with due diligence so that you just don't run your mouth and hurt people's feelings. So that you know exactly what we're talking about. I'm not saying go out there and be a psychologist, psychiatrist, social worker. I'm saying, right? You can say that I heard once that this and this and this and this and this and this in itself, right? It was somewhat identified to this. So maybe you can look into this area to help you with your problem. That is all I'm saying. Lend a helping hand and equip yourself with knowledge. Learn to listen to other people's experiences without thinking that they are boring, and understanding that life is so unpredictable. You might hate alcoholics, right? And tomorrow you turn out to be an alcoholic because you just went through something that was so major. You just kept drinking. And then by the time you snap out of it, right? It's been 10 years without tohupitare kente. You understand? And you don't even know how you got there. But at least when we listen to this, right, we learn to self-regulate, we learn to identify, we learn to see, and we learn to have compassion, and most of all, we learn to have emotional intelligence when it comes to emotional matters and social matters.
Try.
Before we start, ne? I pull this out all the time. This is a disclaimer. Ladies and gentlemen, we as Eagle Media House do not, under any circumstances, claim ownership of any of the clips or the songs or any content that is not my voice, right? We don't claim ownership of it. What we do is we enhance our conversations by playing or showing or allowing you to hear content that is out there in the world. We're not claiming ownership of it. We're just saying that let me share what I listen to. Let me share what I've seen, what I've heard. Let me share. This is sharing of information. It's strictly for illustration purposes. It's strictly for learning purposes. It's strictly for you, right, that can't access this to also hear it. Okay? So don't go out there saying, I'll come for you.
The cocaine, and it was like all the drugs combined with icing on and a cherry on the top. The taste of it, I was married to the pipe. It was just the most beautifulest feeling and taste and sensation you can imagine.
Marvin, where were you born?
I was born in HMP-style women's prison in Wilmslow in Cheshire. My mum was a prisoner, a teenage prisoner. My mum was undecided whether to sign me for adoption or not. So she got released from custody and was unsure whether to give me away. So then I was seen by a Welsh woman and a Jamaican man. They looked at me, seeing my big, beautiful, saucer-shaped eyes, they said, and they chose me. So my mum told me from very, very young that your mum didn't want to give you away. She wanted to keep you, but the circumstances, what was going on around her and her home life and whatnot, she couldn't keep me. She said you was born in distress as well. I never knew that what that meant, so I used to think about that a lot. And then at nights I'd try to sleep, but I couldn't sleep, so I'd be banging my head off the pillow and hold my breath to try and not wake up the next morning. Because I thought, wherever that place is, that's where my mum is. So I used to try and get there by holding my breath.
Are we listening, ladies and gentlemen? So the first two identifiers that we are identifying here is that his mom was young. One, young. Huh? His mom was young. And also the second identifier is that he was born in jail. He was born in a correctional facility. He was born in a correctional facility. Right? These are things that, this is somebody else's life. You understand? You would have never thought like, no, it could never be me. It can never happen. Right? But there are people right now that are giving birth there in correctional. There are people that go there pregnant and give birth there, and the children are raised there for a little while up until the families have to come and collect them, or they get adopted, or they go into the system. These are conversations that are in your wildest dreams, could never be possible until it happens. So what do you think happens to the family members of the pregnant person that goes to jail? Just think about it. Think about it. And then he was adopted, right? With his big brown eyes.
And my dad, he got raised very tough. So his mum and dad apparently didn't like him. They let him move. He lived in it. And he had to run away from home and whatnot. So he was a very tough man. So he used to go to town on me a lot, beat me a lot with belts, bamboo canes. So my mum, obviously, my adoptive mum, she was beautiful towards me. But when my dad used to hit me, she used to say, don't hit him around the head. So that used to confuse me a bit. She wouldn't say, don't hit him. She does say, don't hit him around the head. Anyway, 11 years old. There was these blocks of flats opposite where I lived. And there was this lad, he was about 16. And I got speaking to him and stuff. And I had this games console, like a computer console. And he told me he had some games for it. So we went to his house and he said, no, I haven't got it. My mate's got it over in the other block of flats. So I went over with him. And it was some old man, like in his 50s. So I just didn't think it was right. Anyway, walked in the house, the guy just pulled me straight into the bedroom, pulled his big wooden toolbox behind it, and started just tearing at me with his tongue, or licking me and stuff. So he tailed me clothes off and raped me anyway. So I was 11, I got raped. I went home, shot.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is an 11-year-old boy that gets raped by an older boy. And we think it doesn't happen. We think these sexual violations are only happening to girls. But how many men have experienced that and they keep quiet? Okay, so from now on, I'm going to keep quiet, okay? So that you guys can identify now. Because me, I'm identifying. I'm like, whoa, whoa, red flag, whoa, 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 whoa. Everything for me is whoa, like, because whoa. Also, obviously, I've already heard it. So I'm kind of excited to show it to you guys. So, okay, from now on, I'll keep quiet until we are done, Nick, okay? All right, and give you guys a chance also to be the star of the class.
Like, couldn't speak. Next day, come home from school, he sat in my mum and dad's house. So, like, I'm mortified. So he started talking to my mum and dad, saying, oh, yeah, my mum thanks you very much for helping her going shop for her yesterday. Do you mind going shop for us? I was like, wow. And my mum and dad had not said anything, just like talking to him like they know him. So I just thought, wow. So I started, this was happening for a little bit, happened for all over the summer, a couple of summers. I was getting raped till I was about summer of 2 years. I didn't feel, I couldn't normalize it in my mind. I didn't feel normal. I felt like I was from a different universe. I didn't feel worthy of this earth because I'd never been, no one had ever treated me with any love and respect so far, with genuine love and affection.
What were the ways you found to cope with all of that?
I used butane gas. I started on butane gas when I was 8 years of age. I went into an empty house, and there was loads of these glue bags on the floor and a tin of glue. So I'd seen the glue bags. So I thought, I'm going to try it. So I put the bag inside the glue and scraped it round and started sucking on it. And it just sent me to, like, it felt like the place where I should have been when I was born, not this place. So it was a beautiful place. It was hallucinogenic. It took me away. It was an escape. So I didn't think anything of it, but I knew it was wrong. I was very confused growing up. I was trying to find my mum. I used to run away from home a lot to try and find her. All I could think about was my mum growing up. So then the drugs were sort of taking me there to try and meet her. Like, we have this invisible cord, what binds us. And I could feel a pulling on it. When I was like 14, started taking LSD, started taking ecstasy, started taking amphetamine. My drug use started getting a lot worse as I was getting older. I was taking more and more drugs. So when I got to 15, I was playing up in school. I'd been expelled. I'd been sent to a school like where you need a bit of extra help for being a bit of a nuisance in the classroom. So I went there. I went there a couple of times. But by then, I was selling drugs for a girl after school. So I was doing that after school for money, to buy other drugs and experiment with other drugs. And then I was out in a club one night. We used to go to, like, the Hacienda and Conspiracy and all these clubs. And I was out in a club one night and seeing this girl dancing on the dance floor, and she looked really pretty and dead fun. And I started chatting to her, and she offered me to go back to her. So she lived local to me. She said to me, I'm sat in her house, she said, "You've ever took cocaine?" So I said, Yeah, but what I'd only did is I'd only tried it in joints in nightclubs before, because like a little spliff of coke had been passed around. So I'd never really tried it, but I was only 17, trying to show off, saying, yeah, I've tried it. And she came in with a pipe with the photo with ash on it, with a big piece of crack on it. It was white cocaine to me. So I tried the cocaine, and it was like all the drugs combined, with icing on and a cherry on the top. So I quickly became addicted to crack cocaine. I don't understand how it's gripped me, but so much. It was so nice. It was so, the taste of it. I was married to the pipe. It was just the most beautifulest feeling and taste and sensation you can imagine. I was stealing out of the city centre. I was shoplifting. I was going in and out of prison, getting recalled, getting arrested for thefts and whatnot.
So how many times, all in all, you've been in and out of prison?
I've been to prison probably between 25 and 30 times. I used to go to prison many times for thefts, and I'd get very short sentences. But in fact, it was very good for me because I was a crack addict, I was skinny as a rake. And little 6 week sentences used to help me put on weight, get my physical self back in order. And as soon as I'd walk into prison anyway, I'd know everybody. Everyone would be like, yes, you're back on the wing, buzzing. So I'd be selling drugs on the wing for people, selling heroin, selling anything, tablets, cannabis.
How easy is it to get drugs in prison?
Oh, it's very easy, yeah, very easy to get drugs in prison. I was hanging around with a gang who was, had all the links and they were always the right plugs, and we was getting throwovers off over the wall, so there was anywhere up to a kilo of cannabis resin coming over, 6 mobile phones, steroids, needles, Subutex, crack cocaine, cocaine. So it does come over the wall. It was very, very easy. But a lot of people in prison spend a lot of money in prison as well. Like, there's people who go to prison who have got money and they start spending. So what happens is you give them, say, a quarter of cannabis. They give you £200, but their girlfriend passes it your girlfriend on the street. So it's very easy to get in a lot of debt as well. So there have been times when I've been asked to go collecting debts in prison as well.
Like what?
Say, hot water in people and whatnot. But that didn't happen often. And also doing, like, people say they want to see blood. So if someone says they want to see blood off the hit, so I knew the person who was doing the hit on, I'd say to them, look, I've got to do a hit on you, there's wages on your head. Just let me tap your eye over here like you're doing rapses with your knuckles, like that. And I'll pop your eye open. There'll be a lot of blood, it won't hurt. And sometimes I'd have to do that, it was necessary. So the kid would get out of trouble and I'd get paid the wages as well. So yeah, I did that a few times. Not very proud of them situations though.
What do you think were the worst experiences in prison?
I've watched someone's head get squashed in a door, killed. Someone owed some of a £10 canteen. So the lad punched him. As he punched him, the lad fell on the floor. And as he fell on the floor, the lad who punched him sort of said, get out my cell. But he fell on the floor and his head had caught between the door. And as he's pushed the door, he slammed the door and he crushed his skull on the floor. And he was dead. So when I got out of prison when I was 20, I'm just stopping people in cars, saying my mate in the park's got the best drugs and I'm getting paid for that. So that's how I'm carrying on my crack cocaine addiction. And then I've got the working girls coming to me and saying, Marv, who's got the best crack? But I wasn't really a drug dealer. I was just a crackhead. I was just trying to get a little bit of shekels off everyone who's selling drugs. You know, I'm trying to get customers for them and whatnot.
So how long your crack addiction lasted for?
I had a 20-year crack addiction. I fell in love with it. It was nothing like it on earth. It's the most strongest drug in the world. It's the most addictive drug on the planet for a reason. What happened when I was 33, I was still a raging crack addict. 33 years of age, New Year's Eve, I'm riding down the road, I've just come out of prison. I see this guy who I know, and this guy punts his girls, puts them on the beat, forces them to smoke crack, forces them into prostitution. So I see him with some young girl and I say to him, yeah, what are you doing with her, mate? Don't you dare take her onto that beat down there. So he's gone, oh, no, I won't. I'm just having a drink, because it was New Year's Eve, bear in mind. So he's gone in the newsagents in the shop. So I said to the girl, yeah, take my number. If you need me for anything, phone me. Like, because he's trouble. So stay away from him. So she takes my number. Half an hour later, rings her back. I says, you all right? So she's crying. She said, he's just beat me up in the gay village. You need to come and help me. So I went and rid on my little bike. So I go and get her. Start talking to her, find out that she's only 18, she's having a bit of trouble at home and stuff, and she's with this guy, and this guy's much older. I said to her, you need to get away from him, he will get you addicted to drugs, and he will get you on the beat before you can even realise what's happening. So that was that, leave it. Next day, I rings her again, say, how are you, what are you doing? So she says, he's beating me up, I need to get away from him, he's beat me up because I left with you last night. So I'm someone who's staying at my niece's house. I've just come out of prison. I ain't got a secure address. I'm in a little spare bedroom. So I phone my niece up and I say, look, I've just met this girl and she's only young. She's not a drug addict. Do you mind if she stays in my room with me? She went, don't you dare bring no scruffs here. So I said, I won't, I promise. So anyway, brought her to the house. So she's staying at the house. I get recalled to prison. I'm wanted for a license breach. So I get recalled to prison. While I'm in prison, She phones me up from prison and says, he's just levered me on a bus. So I say to her, go to the police. So she said, no, it's grassing. I said, it's not grassing. So I convinced her to go to court against this man and get him 5.5 years. So we got locked up for that. So that was very empowering. And I've been with the girl ever since. And now we've been together for 15 years. So every time I'm smoking crack for hours, I can't wait for it to go so I can go back to living a normal life, because I won't smoke crack in her house. I won't smoke crack near her. So I'm going to the house. I've got no crack. I'm waking up the next morning. All I can think about is crack. So I'm running away. I'm running all the time. And she's following me to crack houses saying, you've got to stop. You've got to stop doing this. Like, you're not happy. And I knew I wasn't happy. But I was working with an adoption agency because I was adopted. And they wouldn't open my adoption file for me. She kept saying to me, when you get off drugs, we will help you. We will go to the next step. So I wanted to get clean so I could find my birth family. When I was clean, my adoption agency worker said, right, you're ready to open your adoption file. So I went away so happy, thinking, yes, I'm going to find my mum finally at last. 2 weeks later, she phones me up. I walk in, she gives me my mum's death certificate. She says, I'm so sorry, I couldn't tell you before. So they said to me, we've got the best news in the world. Your mum's gone, but we have found your birth mum's family. So I said, all right then. So they said, we're going to have to send all your previous convictions to them. And then they've got to decide whether they want to get to know me or not. So I wait. So I'm dead nervous thinking they're going to want to know me or not. And my auntie contacts me. My auntie contacts them and says, yeah, I want a relationship with him. So what had happened was, when my mum gave me away, how my auntie found out about me was, she started seeing a lad called Marvin, and my mum found out. Now, my mum called me Marvin at birth, so my adoptive mum never changed it out of respect for her. She put Lee at the front, but she never called me Lee. She always called me Marvin. And that's how they found out, yeah. I have just had the most amazing time. Like, they've been beautiful towards me, really nice people, Greek Cypriot, very family orientated. A loving family, very tight-knit.
Looking back at your life and everything you've been through, if you could change one thing, what would you change?
My mum signing that certificate to give me away. Yeah, that was it. I would rather sat with my mum than whatever happened to me. Because whatever happened to my mum... is a sad tale, but my life was, I needed her. I needed my mum. I went searching for her all my life. I just couldn't find her. I tried so hard, and I wanted to find her when I was on drugs, but I felt I didn't deserve to look for her while I was a drug addict. You know what I mean? I didn't feel like she'd want to know me or anything like that. So I decided I wouldn't try and find her while I was on drugs. But the minute I got off drugs, I was ready. I was ready to do this. I missed out on living a normal life. I wasn't a normal member of society when I was stealing and committing crime. I used to go into the city centre and I wouldn't walk down the main thoroughfare. I'd be walking down every little back street and entry possible because I never felt worthy to be a member of that humanity. I'd never felt that it'd ever give me anything good. It treated me really bad. So I never felt like it. I was part of it. I always felt like I was a different part of it. I'm at peace. I've just had a baby. My girlfriend had a baby 2 years old. He is now happier than I've ever been in my life.
And as they were walking around me, one of them would punch me, headbutt me. As this was going on, the guy was looking down at me.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You guys can officially call in and we can discuss. Those lives are wild. It is wild. It is wild. It is wild. Tate Buena, you can call in. I'm just waiting for you to call in so that we can have a discussion about this. I want you guys to identify the few things that has gone wrong in this gentleman's life that we can say may or may not contribute to what he became later on in life. Now, you see how people think that children don't notice their absence because, you know, they're in a better place, you know. They are living with rich people, or they're living with my mother, or they're living with my father, or they're living with their uncles. We don't know, right, to the extent of which a child can miss their parent. Good evening. Good afternoon. Hello.
Afternoon.
Yes, that's it.
Provided you give us some method of coping, because this is so traumatizing.
I know. The whole time your mouth is just open when you are listening, you're like, ha, ah, ah, ha.
I was writing, and then the first thing that I wrote was that, yes, you were born in distress. I understand, it's true.
It's true.
So it means that people can be born in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Because if you are a criminal and you are pregnant, does that mean you're not going to go to jail just because you are pregnant? There's a whole wing in correctional facility, ne, that is just for them to raise their children up until the age of 2. Then somebody has to come and collect the child because the child, from the age of 2, the child can now see. The child can now experience. The child can now become something else. Of course. Opuna, there are even some cases where other inmates just pick up your child and they pagira mwara tadenga amekum. Yes. You are not with people that can necessarily, you are not with ordinary citizens, huh? You're with people that have been put away. Some people are put away for life, eh? Because they can never go out into society ever again. They are unrehabilitatable. And then you are saying, nakakale komo. My goodness.
So now, you know, this kind of, is good.
Mm.
Because he has come out. Unlike those whom we are bearing our traumas and all these things, you know, sometimes you become more free.
Yeah.
Especially when you are now introduced to those things at that age, at that early age, and the way you are professed to be.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So you know, it's like there's a scripture somewhere the teaching where we are saying. One of the women who was born apparently that her destiny, her life is destined to doom. And she changed her life actually.
Yes.
So we are told that she changed her life because she could not believe that.
You understand? Yeah, that could be her destiny.
Even that my name, even the name she was given, I guess that I cannot remember now. And she said, no, Isabella or whatever, something like that.
Mm.
So, and then she say, no, this is not the name. The name, portrays somebody who was just born, to suffer, you know, like the boy says, you are born to suffer and all this kind of thing. And she refused to carry that name.
Mm.
So, and in this case, Lee Marvin, I think he's just good that he came out.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really true experience.
Yes. It's his life.
Then you can imagine cocaine, all these drugs. Mm-hmm.
Just look at what age he started. At eight. Oh. 8 years old. What is an 8 year old doing starting drugs?
Man.
And he says that, when he would do, sometimes he would hold his breath so that maybe he can go to a place where he can be with his mother.
But when he was now, after when he was born, after 2 years, so because there was a thing I heard that the mother wanted to give him away.
Mm.
Is it when because he was in the correctional service?
No, his mother adopted, his mother let him be adopted, huh? He was adopted. And the mother didn't want, but she felt like, because she's young and there is no one going to assist her, she decided to give the child up for adoption. And then he was adopted by a very caring mother and an abusive father.
Is it the father who went to rape her? Him?
No, he was raped by an older boy. He was raped by an older boy that used to, when older children take fondness in our younger children, we always want to associate it to it's being good, especially if the child is good. Like in your neighborhood, there's a good child that is studying, he's doing sports, he's what, and he's just a great child. You understand? Then that child takes fondness in your small child. You always think that it's a good thing because now your child can learn good manners, your child can learn, you know, principles, and your child can learn what. But the thing that we don't see is maybe there are underlined issues, because why does a big boy want to hang out with a small child? Are there no other big boys that he can hang out with?
We have got those molestation going on.
And it was by a big boy. It was by this big boy. And then this big boy came into the house and he started coming into the house. And he says he remembers when he came into the house, he saw this guy that did this to him, right? Sitting with his parents. And his parents were so happy, you know, that this big boy is taking an interest in him. Kucha, oh, he's going to help our child be a good child. Mara Kanti, this person is your child's abuser.
Oh my God.
Man. Oh my God.
And that's why
we have to, there are so many things that we have to be careful with. Shashi no, epurondi unakwipura is, what is a big boy doing with a small boy? Why is an 18-year-old hanging out every day with an 11-year-old? Ota popishike. Of course. Just imagine how scared you would be if your abuser was sitting with your parents and your parents love your abuser.
You know those things, I don't know, honestly speaking. Oh, I that one for a negation pain and the doro done.
Yes. Because you just think of how many times you have made your child uncomfortable by inviting this person in nani or ya tarongeroka na koyushad. We had one listener on open conversations here on our show. This boy. He was basically talking about, you know, his traumas. It was just an open conversation, you know, on our Wednesdays. And I think it was like 2 years ago or something. And he came in and he spoke about how he was molested. He was raped by the guy that Alitha Ongobe Kohambo. So the father would always force them, kucha, otamu iko hambo. And leave them there, Kohambo, with this guy on Lithiwa Ngobe. And this guy was sexually violating him. And he said he has never told his father, he has never told anybody. Up until one day.
You know, the reason why many people don't tell those stories. Those tell these stories. Because we have a lot of them.
Yes.
We have so many boys who are molested.
Mm.
Who are those kind of crimes are done to them.
Mm.
And the fear from the elder one.
Yes.
Like if you say, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this. The same apply. Even some of the women, there was a 2-3 years ago, women who were raped, who were sexually harassed,
mm.
and all these other things, like as men now also sexually harassed, mm. Abused or violated or whatever. Mm. And they don't come out just because of that mentality from the childhood.
Yes.
You think like you know, like yeah. you think
you just feel, go you back to so being worthless. Yes.
You feel so worthless. You felt like it's the worthless.
And also the stigma that comes with it. The stigma that comes with it at the end of the day, ne, we can't imagine it. We can't imagine it. That's why some experiences, right, you will only know if you have ever experienced it. But we can't imagine it.
This is a hot. So now, mommy, you know what?
Mm.
I think this message, the one we have heard, it is happening because you are afraid to be beaten up. And then a lot of things can be happening.
Mm-hmm.
Even in this, because I only heard
mm-hmm.
in this, some of these schools, like in Windhoek and many other things,
yes.
things were really happening. Superintendent will do this and this and mm-hmm. that and that. But I know it's also happening in our cycle there.
Yes.
So it's just that maybe the creation of understanding and to remove that significant fear.
Mm.
So that people can come, because it come with abuse.
Yes.
Like you say, you were discussing about when children are abused from the onset.
Mm.
So they tend to become very violent.
Yeah.
Because they think that is the way of behaving.
Yes.
So it is a really pathetic, and the person, when he grows up with that, and if the person has not acknowledged, mm. gone to some kind of counseling and say, yes, this has happened.
Mm.
It's a cultural kind of effect.
Yes.
That has happened. And for you, because of your vulnerability by that time,
mm.
you can now accept and live a free life,
mm.
free of, this conscious. You know, your conscious will feel, you don't feel void, not towards God, even towards that person who has done that thing. Because I'm so sure, if that person has not come to that level of understanding and acknowledgement, and then he might still be bitter
mm.
and continue, he might have that, those thoughts of committing violence.
Yes.
Because he's very bitter. Mm. He's angry.
Mm.
Because of just that act that was done to that person.
Mm.
So I think
part of the anger that comes with men when they are violated by other men, right, is that sometimes it dawns on your masculinity. Sometimes it questions your masculinity and your male dominance. If you are an alpha male or a beta male, or if you are a man at all, because and this is some, it's a very bad comparison. But it's a very bad comparison. But most people, when they associate rape or molestation to anything, right? They associate it to heterosexuality, which is now boy on girl, girl on boy. They don't associate it to same sex. And when it does happen in same sex, it questions whether you are feminine or masculine, and that is why somebody could do this to you. These are just some of the components, right, that can erupt from such things. That is why we can find somebody that changes or becomes sexually attracted to the same sex sometimes, because they were violated by somebody of the same sex. Yeah.
I know it's our prayer that please, it's very barbaric.
Mm.
and very traumatizing indeed. So nevertheless, you are always there to at least console us. You know, even himself, in his consolation, it was very, very difficult. And I think he has actually also consulted himself. But for the mother now to give him away, is it perhaps just because of, I don't know.
It's because of circumstances. Because at the, what we also have to look at is the fact that these are babies giving birth to babies. You know, teenage pregnancy. These are babies giving birth to babies. And then now, you are in a juvenile system.
Our story of the mother, even though we might not be able to know.
She died.
Yes, she died.
She died. She died before he could meet her.
Before he could meet her?
Yeah, so he has never met her. So he was just given a death certificate. After, so he decided that he's going to get clean and going to get sober. So that he can now feel like he is going to be worthy enough to meet his mother when he's clean, right? Because also with addiction, there's a lot of self-harm, self-blame, and also shame that comes with addiction, because addiction has a tendency of diminishing your character and also diminishing your dignity and self-respect and sense of self-worth. So he first got sober, and then he was given an opportunity to go through his adoption files. And part of his adoption files was a death certificate of his mother. And the death certificate, but he did go into contact with his mother's family, and they were first given his records to say that this guy has been to jail about 30 times in his life. He is an ex-addict. He's a what. They gave the family an option to decline or to accept their meeting. And the family gladly accepted him, and they took him in and they loved him, and he's been clean ever since. Yeah. So this just leaves us, right, to wonder if this guy can remain, can get clean so that he can meet his mother. Imagine if he actually had a mother throughout the whole time, would he not be a different person?
Obviously, he's even a different person.
Yeah.
He's my mentor, he's my role model. So if he could now get to that level, and I thank God for the acceptance of from the parents, the relative, and things like that. These are true stories that because of our masculinity and all these things that you have just mentioned, some of these things actually prevent us to come out. So even though you come out, but there might also be some barriers, but that should not discourage us. Just to have some kind of courage and come out like he did and cancel us and give us some more life and things like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Mimatria, for that opportunity and for giving us. I think we know now how we can.
I think the best lesson that we can take from all these conversations is, right, that we can only fight things we know. We need to know, we can only fight things we know.
Yeah.
And we need to evaluate our lives and our behavior and ourselves to see if we are exactly who we want to be or we could be. So when you know that there is a problem, then even if you're not doing anything about it, even if nothing is happening, you start to self-regulate knowing that you're having a problem. It's like when you have TB. Right? In the house. When you don't have TB, you are just using any cup. Any cup, any spoon, you are just a normal person in the house. But the minute you know, whether you are on medication or you are not on medication, the minute you know that you have TB, right? You start having your own cup and your own plate and your own spoon because you don't want to infect other people. And it's through that care, whether you went to the hospital, whether you got medication, whether you are taking them or not, right? There's a certain sense of accountability. There's a certain sense of responsibility that comes with knowing what your problem is. So if you know, Kucha, sometimes when the clouds are outside, I don't function very well. People that are like that, right? They don't go out when it's cloudy. Mm-hmm. And that is self-regulation.
Yes.
Yeah.
So no, I think we are really learning.
Mm-hmm.
It helps us to be in check with mm-hmm. So that our conflicting minds and all these things. But once we are in proper check of our mind, our mm-hmm. emotion, feeling,
yes,
like you said, I think it will help us to cope with the situation.
Yes.
Mm.
Mm.
So thank you very much, Matthias.
Thank you so much, Tate Buana.
God bless.
God bless. All right, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon to you. We are riding serious waves, right? We are riding serious waves and we are going into it. We are going into it and we are evaluating situations and stories that I know that it sounds very unreal. But these are people's realities. And if this is somebody's reality out there, it might be somebody's reality that you know. And talk a little bit shorter. Hmm? Talk a little bit shorter. Talk a little bit kinder. And understand. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have always had the ordinary citizen tell us about their experience in psychiatric, right? And they always, you know, they give us this grandiose experiences and we don't really take it to mind because maybe we know them. But let's hear.
My name is Banning Lyon. My story is about why I chose to become a backpacking guide in Yosemite National Park and the circumstances that led me to that. After my parents' divorce, things changed really dramatically. My dad just vanished. My mom had basically a nervous breakdown. Bedridden, non-functional. She came down with shingles. I just kind of became what she called the man of the house overnight at the age of 11. Overnight, my life really became a very dark, very sad place where I was sort of my own parent. After about a year and a half or 2 years, I ultimately heard for my dad again, and he was going to be getting remarried. I moved in with him, and the woman that ultimately became my stepmom, she was very young. She was in her late 20s at the time, and she was really into structure and trying to get me to do chores. And so we just butted heads a lot. And ultimately, I lived with them for about a year until they sat me down one day and said, you can't live here anymore. Your mom is full custody. You're living with us as a privilege and you need to go back and live with her. So I called my mom, told her what had happened and that I needed to live with her. And she said I couldn't because her place was too small in Southern California. She said, just go ahead and fly to Dallas and live with your aunts and uncles until I can meet you there. I flew to Dallas. I lived with my aunt and uncle and my two cousins for a while. And then ultimately my mom moved to Dallas about a year later. We moved into a small room above my aunt. I was 15. I didn't think anything of it at the time. Granted, my life at the time was a little rough. You know, I mean, I'd been bounced around from house to house. And I suppose there probably were people in my life who were concerned about me, but I was just, I knew kids a lot worse off than me at that point in time. I felt like a pretty average suburban kid. Nobody was listening to me. And I think that was one of the most aggravating things for me as a teenager. Adults just had these conversations over my head. They never listened to me. They never took what I had to say at face value. They never treated me like an equal. They just had conversations around me and about me. And I still identify with teenagers to this day for that reason. And I'm 52, but I still feel like I'm 16 because I get it. I know what that feels like. They went ahead and signed me into the hospital. I didn't have a choice. It was either that or I run away, which I considered for about 30 seconds. And so I went into the hospital and we walk in and I'm just standing in this admissions office. And then they escort me onto this unit with these magnetically locked doors. And so I immediately felt out of place. And as the days went on, they said I'd be there for 2 weeks. So as the days went on, I would meet with a psychiatrist. 2 weeks passed and 3 weeks. And I'm like, why am I still here? So ultimately the psychiatrist who had been in charge of me, he sat me down one day and said, you know, we feel like you have major depression or you're having a hard time making friendships, which I thought was absurd because they put me on in a unit with a bunch of adults. They said, we're going to send you to the adolescent long-term unit. It sounded nightmarish. A day or two passes and they went ahead and transferred me. I walk across the rotunda to go to this other unit and I look in these narrow windows and the other unit, my adult unit, had been just filled with activity, like people smoking and playing cards. It was always noisy. And this unit looked deserted. It just looked sterile. I didn't see anything. This guy comes in and walks me through the doors and they lock behind me. As I walk down the hallway, I look to my left and they're having what's called a unit meeting. All the kids are gathered around in a circle. I remember this so vividly and they all sort of look up at me. I'm walking, I look in the kind of right hand corner back of the room and there's this girl who's strapped to a bed and she looked like a cave girl and she just watched me with this like horrible look in her eyes, like she was like desperation and her despair. And I knew at that moment that something really horrible had happened to me. It was an experience that I will never forget. I thought for a long time that it had ruined my life. It took me a long, long time to get over all the things that I experienced there. Life with my mom when I was a child, like I said, before the divorce was wonderful. Afterward, it was, like I said, my mom was bedridden. After a few months, there came a time where she would wake my sister and I both up in the middle of the night. We would sit around the kitchen table and we would just talk. My mom would talk about how lonely she was and how horrible our lives were. My mom was just kind of at the end of a rope and I was 11. I obviously didn't fully comprehend how horrible, you know, this had been for my mom, and I had no idea what had happened. I didn't understand the circumstances of their divorce, and I got bullied a lot, but you know, I've been used to that, and I was not happy, and my dad was gone a lot. So life in Texas at my aunt and uncle's house was emotionally, I felt sort of abandoned. I felt like I wasn't living with my family. I was living with people who obviously didn't want me. They were just sort of out of the goodness of their hearts, kind of taking me in. I just sort of emotionally didn't grow roots. I just knew that there was no reason to kind of build any ties with anyone because I was just going to be shipped off to the next place. And when my mom moved there, my life by then was kind of improving. I was bummed out. I was sad. And as a 15-year-old, I didn't know what depression felt like. Nobody really explained it to me. I was just like, life sucks. Like, I'm 15, life sucks. So I'm open to the idea that people would look at me and be like, yeah, that kid's depressed. Cause my hair was crazy. You know, I would draw on my clothing. I would tear it up. I listened to, you know, bands like Black Flag and Minor Threat and Descendants. And there were a lot of things that people could misinterpret. But yeah, still to this day, I remember that feeling of not being listened to, trying to explain to people the circumstances of what had happened, and they would just talk through me and they would ignore what I'm saying and re-ask me questions as if they hadn't heard my explanation. And I feel like, especially in the world today, we don't listen to each other. A lot of people don't listen to each other. They're set in their opinions, speak them to other people, whether they're political or whatever they might be. We've stopped listening to each other. While I was in the hospital, it's very hard to explain to what I call normal people. I don't think they understand what our hospital was like. So I was not allowed to go outside. We were not allowed to touch anyone. I wasn't allowed to have any private conversations. One of the rules in the hospital was keep your bedroom door closed. I had a roommate. My roommate was also in restraints. He was tied to a bed. They would ask me to close the door and I wouldn't do it. And so I kept forgetting this rule. And so each time I forgot it, they would give me basically a punishment and they would say, you have to sit a 30-minute chair. I had to just sit in a chair in the hallway and not say anything or look at anybody. Hands, feet flat on the floor, hands on my lap for 30 minutes and think about why I left the door open. Like there was some deep psychological reason. Finally, after a month on the adolescent long-term unit, my doctor said, we're putting you on indefinite chair. Any free time, any time in between activities, I had to sit chair. When you're on chair, if you do something that they don't like you to do, like laugh with somebody or make eye contact with someone or fidget, they say you get a test mark because they can't give you a chair because you're already on chair. They put me on what was called permanent chair in room. I had to sit chair in my room facing the wall, literally like a foot or two from the wall, facing the wall. When summer arrived, I was sitting permanent chair in my room for as many as 10 to 12 hours a day sometimes. I ultimately lost meal privileges. I had to eat meals in my chair, in my room, facing the wall. So I had lost all privileges. I had no privileges at all. And then thank God school came back. You know, once school was right, I mean, it was the first time in history of high schoolers like, yes, thank God school, because once summer was over, I got to get off my chair for about 3 to 4 hours during school. You never relaxed. It was very quiet. Staff members would walk by my door every 15 minutes and make sure I was there. And sometimes a few staff member was in between those windows at 15 minutes just to see if I was doing something wrong. So what I discovered after a couple days on chair was if I tipped my chair backward and I rocked slowly, it would make the screen kind of disappear and I could see the outside a little more clearly. So I would learn to rock on my chair and look out the window and I could see this tree kind of outside my window. My only joy in life was to see that tree. The hospital was also an incredibly violent, scary place. Some people who were in restraints had been in restraints for so long that they had sort of just been dehumanized. One girl had been in restraints. From my understanding now, she was ultimately in restraints and bed restraints tied to her bed for 18 months. During that time, she did not have a bath or shower. Another friend of mine from the unit, he wound up being in bed restraints for 333 days. He needed physical rehab to learn how to walk again. There would be times that those people, you know, staff would annoy them. And when you're in restraints, you have nothing left to lose. So you just kind of lose it. You just get angry. I saw a lot of really violent, horrible stuff. You know, people would start slamming their heads into the wooden headboard of their bed, like trying to split their heads open, or people would tear out their hair, try to gouge out their own eyes. They would bite themselves and claw themselves, and they would scream. Like, the sound for me is, like, to this day, since I was ultimately in chair in my room, a lot of my experience of what I remember of chair, of restraints was the sound, disembodied screaming and shrieking, and not being able to see it was almost worse, because then your imagination dreams up things that are terrible. And so the hospital just became a very terrifying, very scary, very sad place. So after a while, I began to sort of just dissociate. It was like something inside of me separated from reality and was like, just became very numb. Because you just can't live with that stuff every day. And the reality of it, the pain of it, the severity of it, all of it, just, you can't bear it that long. And so there just comes a time where it became very numb. And new people would show up and see it happen and cry. And I would just look at them like I felt like a robot. And it's profoundly affected my life, like my relationships. So many things in my life are affected by this, like, dissociative sort of impulse that I have now. I've been on the unit for maybe a few weeks. The first girl left, and she had been on the unit for 3 years. Her insurance is pulling her, and she was crying. She was like, I don't want to leave. And I was like, what the hell? Like, why would somebody not want to leave here? And that was terrifying to see. Like, she was this beautiful blonde girl, and I was like, why is this, like, really apparently normal person not acting normal? Why does she want to live on a psychiatric unit and stay here after being here for 3 years? So the whole hospital became sort of a game to me, where I'm dissociated, I'm numb, people leave when their insurance runs out. How can I make that happen for myself? So I was like, okay, well, the kids who leave act this way and say these things, I will act that way and say those things. So I began to, like, play a role. I would adopt sort of a persona, yet try to leave. And that was my whole goal. My whole goal there was to leave. And so I would go into therapy with my doctor. Be like, well, my parents divorced. I felt really sad and abandoned. But then they would tell me, this is performative. Like, you're just saying these things. You don't really seem to feel these things. Yeah, that's true. Because if people got angry or raised their voice, they got tied to a bed. I just found a way to sort of take what was true to me, or what I was feeling, and apply it. And then ultimately, after I've been on the unit for, what, 9 months, 8 months, my insurance said, we're pulling you. And I was like, hallelujah. They gave the hospital like 3 to 4 months to get me out and find a home for me. So ultimately, I was sent to a halfway house in Dallas. And that took place after I'd been in the hospital. When I began the process of leaving the hospital, I understood that blonde girl suddenly. I knew why she was afraid to leave the hospital. The first time I left the hospital, my first pass was to a bowling alley. It was during the day. I remember walking into this bowling alley, and there were so many sounds. There were people bowling, and there were arcade games, and lights, and people would talk over each other. Conversations were not controlled. People would yell and laugh. The whole world just seemed like really chaotic and hard to tolerate. So by the time I left the hospital, I kind of realized, like, something inside of me, it's broken. I felt like I was totally not prepared to deal with the real world anymore. I felt worse when I left the hospital. Way worse than when I went in. The halfway house was intended to sort of give me this controlled environment where I could kind of reintroduce myself to the real world. It helped. I mean, the halfway house was great. I loved it. We would all eat dinner together and cook, and we were responsible for our own laundry, our own grocery shopping. We had to kind of do our own bills. We didn't have a lot of restrictions, and life was really up to us. I had to take the public bus to school, but across the street was this graveyard. And so every night we would all just go across the street to the graveyard and sit in the back of the graveyard and watch. There was a drive-in movie theater like a block away. and we would watch. They always seemed to show The Shining. They showed The Shining a lot. So we would sit in the back of the graveyard and watch The Shining. I realized very quickly that something had been sort of damaged in me. It wasn't until in my 20s or 30s that I began to realize or learn or read about how, like, in your teens, your prefrontal cortex, your brain essentially is rebooting. Whatever situation you're living in as a teenager, whatever you're experiencing, is programming you for adulthood. Throughout my life after the hospital, whether it was people I dated or my friends, people who are wounded tend to find each other. There are so many people in the world who, just like me, have these wounds that make them feel as if they're completely alone, like nobody else is wounded like them, like we're each an individual jigsaw piece. I went through my life feeling very much like those people. I'm going to get kind of emotional, but I love those people so much because in each of them, I not only saw a reflection of myself and my wounds, but I realized all of us are not individual broken jigsaw pieces. We're all from the same puzzle. We all belong to the same puzzle. And our wounds, when we share them, they unite us. And you realize that there are not as many differences between us as you think there are. When I turned 39, I had gone through what amounted to basically two suicide attempts in my life. I made a decision. I was like, I'm going to change my life. Like, I cannot live like this anymore. So I became a backpacking guide in Yosemite. I'll never forget, there was the one trip where I was with my boss, and this guy who was this big Marine was about to cross this creek with his wife, and he sat down on a log and he started crying. And this guy was like this big burly dude, and he's crying. I'll never forget this. I'm gonna start tearing up. They all three stand up together, the wife, the husband, and my boss. They all walk into the creek together. It's like a baptism. They all walk into the creek together and they cross it. And I walk up to my boss and I said, hey, what's going on? And my boss looks at me like it's totally normal. And she goes, he booked this trip because his brother drowned crossing a river and he wanted to finish crossing one for him. And I remember thinking, like, this is why I got this job. Without exception, that happens on every trip. My book, my memoir, is called The Chair in the Valley. It took me 6 years to write it. My amazing wife supported me through all of it. I wrote my book because I want people to understand that our wounds and our trauma don't need to define us anymore. Those things are not who we are. We are not the things that happen to us. And that nature, at least for me, and I think for many other people through what I've witnessed, is a key part of that if we just give it a chance.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I know that this has been a heavy, 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 heavy conversation. But let's take a musical break and then you guys can call in and we can talk about it.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. It's an honor to be here. It is with my pleasure that I present to you tonight, Below Zero, by Friday!
Summer's over, and you're still not sober. You've been moving too fast, now the time moving slower. I'm still on the
line.
When they turn on the lines, it's time
to call it in. Hope I'm still on your mind. Don't know you. Tastes like water on your lips.
You have
one too many drinks.
Try to run away from home. They like
Miami where she lives.
On a Sunday,
get lit. I pray you make it back. Cause when September comes around,
your system. All that partying deep in claws, but you're losing your rhythm. Too much late nights, you don't know what a morning is.
Better wake up before you lose out on it.
And I ain't got no pride to save you, oh my.
inside to give you all my loving. You're losing your soul.
But you call it soul searching. Oh, I'm losing hope. Don Julio tastes like water on your lips. You have one too many trips.
Tryna run away from home, they like Miami where she live. On a Sunday, get lit. I pray you make it up. Cause when September comes around, and the leaves are falling, yeah. And October's closing in. It's getting scary when
November, November is. I want to love you before you get below zero. Ladies and gentlemen, are you marinating? But I know the world is filled with so much heartache and so much trauma and so many bad things, right? Mara, we out here and it's not everything that is bad under the sun that has happened to us. Some of the things, ne, we have avoided them. Some of the things were not in our card. Like for me, for example, one of the things that I'm happy about is that I've never had a broken anything in my whole entire life. Like, I've never had a broken leg, broken foot, broken arm, broken nothing. I've never broken a bone in my body ever in my life. And I know that it's not one of the things that you might be listening, you might be thinking about when we are talking about blessings, but I just thought of it and I'm like, yeah, I've never been in a cast in my whole entire life, ever. And for that, I think that I am blessed.
I feel like dancing on my tiptoes. To be always dancing in the shadows. Then I look at what you've given me. I feel like dancing on my tiptoes. I must say, every day I wait and realize you by my side. I know I'm truly. Everything you've given me, blessed for all the tenderness you show. Do my best with every breath that's in me, blessed to make sure you never go. There are times that test your faith till you think you might surrender. Baby,
indeed, we are blessed though. We are ending our Saturday endeavors with a little bit of woo. What a wonderful, wonderful way to say goodbye to you today. I love you guys. And stay strong out there. Stay safe out there. Look out for one another. Even if it's not your relative, look out for them anyways, okay? And I bid you guys farewell. I leave you with Cece and Naledi. And they are going to be doing Amen, okay? Amen.